It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
This is the Winning Plays Podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider for the NBA's winningest franchise.
Winning Plays Podcast is back, and Chris Forsberg, we have a deal. Jaylen Brown, Boston Celtics, $304 million. This is Tuesday, July 25th, so it took them about 3.5 weeks to get this done.
But it's done. Expected.
It's just what I expected.
No.
And what's initial impressions here?
Yeah, I fist bumping because now Celtics writers can all kind of go ease into vacation in August. That's like selfishly we're excited because we didn't want this to linger too long.
That was the number one takeaway, actually, I think, from your calm, right?
Right. That was actually number one, and we'll see if anyone notices. My big thing is, I would say twofold. One, I think we all knew this was going to get done, but certainly when you got to 25 days into July, I started thinking, man, are they going to play clips of me saying, don't worry, don't worry, don't worry. And then, you know, it blows up or something like that. It is a little weird that it took this long to just kind of iron out what feels like some of the just edges of this deal and trade bonuses and fifth year options. And ultimately it came down probably how I thought it would. If the Celtics were to give a full 35%, then they probably didn't want to give that fifth year option, and Jaylen wanted some extra bit of security. And so even though it's limited what the trade kicker can add, I suppose that's a little something. And I guess the biggest thing now is that there's just, everybody has security now, right? Like Porzingis got his deal after being traded here. Jason knows he's getting his, it doesn't matter about all NBA or any of that stuff. And Jaylen's in the house now and with the potential to be here until 2029. So after a year of sort of calamity and years for Jaylen of trade rumors, it feels like next season could be the first time where not a lot of like rumors or wondering about futures. I mean, that's all going to come up at some point when these deals start kicking in.
Don't talk to Malcolm Brogdon.
That one player should not be getting too far ahead of himself. But yeah, like I just think they're set up really well now that, no excuses. Everybody's locked up. Joe's got a year under his belt. It's time to try to get back to that title stage. There shouldn't be a whole lot of distractions.
Yeah, it's a good point for you. Like the security standpoint is first from like the stuff down the line is the stuff down the line. But Brad Stevens, since he's gotten here, he's like to operate where he gives these guys the security. He's a big extension guy. From pretty much day one, and now
Josh Richardson got one.
Yeah, Josh,
like, I mean, that was when I first said, "Oh, Brad really likes extension." So, although it would have been nice if Josh Richardson had come back here, that would have made our offseason a little bit easier to put together. So, just like you said, security is a good thing.
Exactly. So now this contract, it's estimated to be a $304 million. We actually, no one really knows how much it's going to be worth until we see what the cap looks like. But that is the updated estimate right now. And yeah, I mean, it's a situation where that's going to kick in 24-25. He's still only going to make $30.7 million a year. It really doesn't have any impact on what they can do in the present, but now you have essentially the entire roster is under contract right now, or at least the guys that matter for 2 years left. The only guy left, and this could change, Peyton Pritchard is the only guy entering a contract season this year. But we all know, I mean, they have until whatever it is, October 31st, whatever, to figure that one out. And
a big stint at the U.S. select team coming up.
Seriously, we'll see what I bet they'll be watching that tape. He'll be playing more minutes there than he did all last season, but that's neither here nor there. But yeah, I mean, Jaylen, it's going to be fascinating to see how he kind of responds to this now. Because to your point, the trade rumor, like this is, he's never really gotten a break from it. Even like coming off the NBA finals, didn't even get a break from it last summer to start it from here. But now they literally can't trade him for a year. I think it's safe to say, barring disaster, he's certainly safe for the next 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And things will get interesting then. But like, how does he adjust to it? Like, becoming a $300 million player change him? Or is this something for better or worse? I'm fascinated to see how that looks.
Yeah, you know, and I kind of ended my column with this. Like, most players I would be worried about. I always worry when players get paid out because it sometimes saps some of the motivation. But if there's one guy I'm probably not worried about, it's Jalen, who will just, whether it's because of the rumors, whether it's because of the way everyone nitpicks his game, has just always been motivated to come back a little bit better. And so even after signing the largest contract in NBA history, you know, my mentions, as I'm sure yours were too, was, oh, he can't dribble with his left hand, 8 turnovers in game 7. Like, people are still riding him about the holes in his game. And I'm not here to tell you like he's a perfect player. I keep saying this, like, none of these superstars are. And everyone has a little bit of a flaw, and maybe Jalen's is a little bit more present because of his ball handling. But like, I think he's going to be super motivated after game 7 last year to come back and be better. And I don't think $304 million is going to change that. And so I think he usually has the right perspective. I think he's, I'm sure he'll be appreciative of what he's got here, but ultimately, you know, no one puts a, you know, you don't put, get your number in the rafters because of $304 million. So if you want to be up there, and if you want to be, if you want your, to really have a Boston legacy, you got to put a banner up there. And then the conversation changes about, you know, how we view players. And so that's Jalen's challenge. And I think he'll still be motivated to try to prove that. And plus, there's just, like you said, it's going to be a 1 year reprieve from rumors. And then this stuff's going to start right back up even next year. Cause I kept wondering, I was like, wow, I wonder if he's waiting to sign this deal. Because it's 1 year from the date you sign, right? And so if he doesn't sign until, say, tomorrow, July 26th, now he can't be in the rumors technically until July 26th next year. Now they could just work out a trade on July 1 and right, just not trigger it until August. So it's really just 1 year, one season worth of time. But it's coming back, you know, because the Celtics have tough decisions. And that's the other layer to all this is there's no way to really put this puzzle together with Jason, Jalen, and Porzingis long term, at least without completely stripping your supporting cast. And so,
or selling a team to a super duper billionaire,
right? Manager. Or being willing. And maybe so much of it, I think, depends on what happens this year. Like, you win a title, now you're in part, you could go either way, right? Like, you downshift because, yeah, like, you've won one, or you could be like, we could be a dynasty. Let's like lean into this and just pay $1 billion for a year or two. But yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see how it all plays out. It's having two supermax players is a luxury, but not one that you can sustain super long-term without being really, really creative or really hoping that cap escalates in a hurry.
Yeah, it is. If anything else, like you said, like that is going to, like, it's no secret, like what is coming down the pike there. And they have a pretty finite window here of what looks like 2 years, like maybe a little longer than that if things like line up well, but certainly with these pieces in place. And I don't know, for like,
does that change how you'd approach this year? Like one thing I've been wrestling with is it sure seems like they want to avoid that second apron, and understandably so, because of the, especially with repeater penalties and all that. But if you're going to lean into a year, this is sort of the one.
Yeah, so you got to go for it. You got to go for it more. I mean, like you look at it last year too, when it's like, right, you don't trade Gallinari at the deadline, and then what, you hold on him for, I guess, like it helped you for the salary matching for this deal, but it's like,
you would have had other ways.
You would have had other, exactly. It's like, so now it's like, okay, this is like, the window is shrinking from, in terms of what you can, you know, have the kind of luxuries they've built here. And they've, and like we've gone about at length here in the last month. Like, this isn't their fault that it's come to this now, but if anything, right, this is like changes from perspective. So it's like, I think what we realize now as we stare down the pike at this and having, you know, pretty much a fairly predictable offseason to this point, is you have one real swing left with, like, yep, your trade options now. And you have a low TPE, like you've kind of stockpiled these draft picks. That's great.
Yeah.
But like saving them for like next summer, it's like, well, that's less great, because then that's right, like, you know, the pressure is even closer there. So it's now it's like, okay, that deal might not be present this summer, mm-hmm, but you know, December, February, like next season, that's like they're waiting here. And I think if they're not using those tools, whether it's the picks, the TPE, or, you know, the salary you want to move on this team right now, like, I think that's a huge loss opportunity. And I think, honestly, that'd be a failure of this era, and kind of like the story of this era, if they, like, you know, don't get it. Yeah. Really push in on a year and then that coming back to bite them.
That's interesting. And I guess that's why, you know, as much as it'd be easy to get complacent when everyone's under contract and locked up and all that, like there is just an urgency generally about, you know, you're not going to have this luxury of a great roster. And I do hope they lean into that. Now, I don't know what their options are right in this very moment. You know, you hear the report and of not wanting to trade Brogdon right now. And some of that might just be trying to smooth things over because you already tried to deal him once. But also, I don't think his trade value is particularly high right now. But like, it could be a beneficial contract. So if you had $22 million contract and all those picks to go all in, you know, maybe something more materializes down the road, especially into the season when maybe teams start to fade a little bit or, you know, a team has an injury, whatever the case may be. So I do think they have to stay alert to that because it feels like they got to make that move before next summer, right? Like, I guess you could still push up, you can move Brogdon next summer and still kind of bring back somebody of value, but it could not be the level of even a Porzingis, right? Like, it's probably more of a $20 million player, which, you know,
and the rules of trading at that point are tougher too.
Yeah. And that's the other problem is just you're a little bit more, you know, more handcuffed on how you can proceed. So yeah, maybe it has to be trade deadline this year or whatever. But they need to be a little bit more aggressive in that instance. And maybe that's when you're willing to go over. Like I keep saying, you know, as much as you can look at the roster on paper and say, oh, they're a definitive title contender, you know, sometimes you got to get into the season and see it and feel good about it and see how the ebbs and flows and, you know, how everybody else looks. But you know, if there's a deal there to be made, they really got to kind of go for it. And like you said, they got the picks. It's wild that they're in the position here to trade for Porzingis and extend him and supermax their two superstars. And yet they still have a swing of the bat left. It's an embarrassment of riches, but, one that they must maximize long-term to make it worthwhile to have splurged this money on Jaylen.
And I guess now you do have like two, so cause that $6 million TPE that gives you a mini swing. So I guess you get like one, you get a swing and a swing. I mean, you're not getting much in that, but you at least don't have to do it. Like you have more options than the Suns, I see at this point, right, in terms of like being able to actually add play. Like there's not going to be many players that fit into that well, but there are, you know, for you package enough picks, like you're going to be able to get someone who might be semi-useful for that, at least for like that's on a veteran's minimum contract or a mini mid-level there. But yeah, it is. You're right. It is like you're really loading up here. You said goodbye to Grant. And I don't know, like we haven't talked for a month here. Like where are you at for just the state of the roster right now? Like where, like, especially with this band deal looking like it's pretty much a training camp deal. Like there is no, you know, very few strings attached there. So you only have 11 guaranteed roster spots right now. Like you really have a lot of flexibility right now. The trade market in general is stalled with Lillard and Harden still hanging out there for the time being. So that's not to say they can, you know, kind of hop back in this summer with if things change on either of those fronts and kind of loosen things up around the league. But where are you at in terms of where they're at right now?
Yeah, I think they just got to stay alert, right? Like there's going to be, well, maybe when those deals all start materializing, you can either hop in as a third team or maybe it forces some other teams to reconfigure and reevaluate personnel. Part of me is content because I don't, we've now run into probably 2 years where they've been a little overstocked, 2019 and even last season. You know, it's almost better to have too much top end talent, but not have so much talent that is spread out across the board that, you know, you're conflicted on who you're playing. Like it should just be obvious who your seven guys are. And for whatever reason, you know, Grant wasn't part of that mix last year. And so, you know, as much as personally, I'll miss Grant, and I think he could have been a really valuable player for this team if he had played to, you know, what we saw and done that consistently. But if Joe Mazzulla is not going to play him, then you just can't pay the money, and you just got to turn that into assets. And so I just always thought the route was going to be getting two second round picks, and you know, you hope you add that to your pile of assets, and that you materialize it into something that you're more willing to play down the road. And, but I do think they're going to miss Grant's defense. They're going to miss Grant and Smart's tenacity and grit and all that. You know, there's question marks about how this is all going to look and how it's all going to play out. And yet undeniably, they're more top end talent. There's more security. I do feel like if everything falls right, like they are in a better spot to be a championship contender But there's just question marks, like stuff that I need to see. Is the loss of Smart and Grant more jarring defensively and in intangibles than we think? You know, we can't answer those questions right now. Is Porzingis healthy and good enough where it doesn't matter? Like that they're just so dominant offensively now that it doesn't matter that you took a slight step back defensively. Like, is a healthy Rob just like a complete game changer? And do you have enough in this 11 to get by? But it's just a lot left to be answered. Like, chief among them, Brogdon's health, and like how that looks and how that affects the point guard spot. And, you know, does that mean more time for Pritchard at the start of the year? And what does that mean? So yeah, just, I guess I'm eager to see if there's any further tweaking. But like, if ultimately they decide to just kind of tread into next year or you know, walk this roster into next year and kind of be looking to make other moves, I don't think it's the end of the world.
No.
Is that fair?
I think that's fair. Like, you can, starting, if everyone comes in, if this is a healthy team going into next year, like, that's okay. Like, you see what you have and then you make those adjustments. Brad Stevens in general has been a big, like, to make the big move before the season. And he did that obviously with this Porzingis trade. And, you know, while adding the tools to make a move in the middle of the season. But now I would expect, like, another move, you know, probably maybe to come closer to like December than February, right? If they wait until next year, because that's, again, when you're trying to put all the pieces together. But it is, you're right, to your point, like, they life is a lot simpler for Joe Mazzulla entering next season now. Like, sure. There's like the type of playbook is set. He obviously has much more time to plan. But as far as second guessing who will be playing late in games, there'll be less opportunity for me and you to do that, since the choices. I mean, I think, I don't know. I mean, there will be. We'll see about the big situation. We'll see if they close one big versus two bigs and who is on the floor there.
So I might have just asked this on the last pod, because I'll throw it to you. Like, because it is a great conversation, and like it might be what we do for the next like 3 months. Who's the fifth guy closing? I want to see who, because let's see if you line with
what I mean. So, the obvious choice is like, well, I like who's.
So we're assuming that Jason, Jaylen,
yeah,
Derek, and Porzingis.
And Porzingis. Okay.
Who's the fifth?
So I think more often than not, it will be as composed is Brogdon. Oof. And right. Which
I mean,
is
saw last season.
Right. Until he gets traded in December. Right. I don't think that's the right choice. I think that's like going to be the default choice, much like right. It was for last season. But who knows? Maybe it's a situation where if Porzingis and Al and more Porzingis and Rob show the chemistry where it's right. Like pretty much like, Joe, you have to do like, we, here are our numbers of these guys on the floor. You have to, like, you know, we can right. Withstand them getting picked on one. We're going to be overpowering on this other part of the game. I don't know. That's like, that might be the biggest question of the whole of
right.
Next season. Like,
but I can't do another, like, why isn't Derek White playing in crunch time?
Right.
Like, if Al's numbers are good with that group and he's not playing, I'm just going to lose my mind or something. Well, so I said Al, cause I just thought like defensive wise and veteran presence and all that. And, but we got to see how he works for Porzingis, and can he get away with Porzingis and Al and Jason? And I know, you know, Derek is your primary ball handler. And I mean, there's a lot of questions to be asked. And again, I feel like those are great questions to have versus, you know, who are, you know, whether the seventh guy can contribute. Like, okay, you have enough talent where, like, figure out which guys you're going to lean on. And you know, that's not the worst thing to have. It's, the pressure is on Joe to me. You know, he's got to show he can diversify a little bit in terms of the playbook and, you know, have more options for this team, unless he's going to lean headlong into three-pointer-rama. And we'll see. Yeah. We'll see. Like, he's definitely got his own, he's beefed up the coaching staff, guys that can sort of probably push him in directions and make him, you know, go towards some stuff that maybe wasn't as comfortable to go to last year. I'm intrigued to see how it all comes together.
You bring Blake back?
So I just told you before we jumped on, I said when Blake signs in September, like, so Blake probably wants to wait till after training camp to sign. Is that what you would think?
I think he probably wants, my guess is he wants a guaranteed contract, and those are probably not likely to be available until other options are exhausted.
I just assume veterans don't want to go through running sprints.
That too, yeah. I think what did he sign there? Like 5 days in? That was a preseason.
Yeah, last year. Like all you need is a couple of days, a couple of preseason games. Off you go. The reuniting of the Bus One boys right before the start of the training camp would be right before the start of the regular season would be a nice little jolt. The only downside would be is if you missed out on Newport. If I can continue to try to convince somebody.
Yeah, what's the latest on that? Are there
no advancement has been made. I do not suspect I have enough pull within the organization to, but I know the coach should lobby hard being a Rhode Island guy. Yeah. And so if by chance he stumbles upon any of the 9 podcasts that I continue to scream this from, hopefully encourages the team. I mean, I tell Brad every time I see him and he thinks I'm a lunatic because I keep bringing it up. But you know, I just really like Newport.
Things haven't gone well after the Auerbach Center training camp, it seems like.
You know what? I was really excited for the Auerbach Center, and I do not miss Waltham one bit. Maybe you do, because it would have been...
Yeah, it's convenient for me.
But, the only downside has been it really has hurt the allure of going away. They really love having their own medical stuff in there, and the casual fan should know. A lot of teams go to fun places for training camp. I think the Lakers go to Hawaii, or Clippers go to Hawaii, and all the reporters want is a little carrot when you're getting back on that treadmill to help ease the long season that it is. And so take us to a beach or somewhere we can see water. I guess you can see water in Boston, but not the water I want to see. So just consider it Celtics. That's all I'm saying.
All right, let's wrap on this. Given how this went for the last 3 or 4 weeks, who do you think was their winner in these negotiations?
Ooh. I think the Celtics win because, and I don't know, maybe people don't think that's like state news, but like not having the fifth year player option as part of this deal feels like a win. Like it just doesn't happen anymore. Right. Like, and especially wading into the uncertainty of a new CBA, it felt really important that the Celtics did that. And I just thought they had the strongest case. Like if they come to the table and they're like, look, we're giving you 35%. You know, and we're going to work with you on other, like, fully guaranteed, no incentives and all this. Then Jalen had to give a little something. And so that fifth year, and I don't know, you know, does it matter? Like it maybe, you know, it prevents Jalen from getting back to the table a little bit earlier in case he does outkick this contract, which is certainly possible and depends on, like, you know, his trajectory and all that, especially given that he'll still be what, 31 at 30. So he's 26 now, 27. Oh no, he'll be 32. So it'll be his last chance at a bigger deal or whatever. Yeah. And it's just all like whenever you're negotiating these things, everybody wants a little bit. And I honestly think I'd be interested to hear like exactly how they all phrase it. But from the outside, it just certainly felt like they were waiting for kind of each other to the blink on these things. And then they just got to a point where it was probably like, you know, is it really worth just like taking this thing into August to get to the finish line? I don't know if the trade bonus really matters. He can only earn up to 35% on those things. That's it's a small percentage. A little again,
it would be far down the line for it to matter, right? Like, in a way.
And I don't think it'll. In most of the time, in those situations, players either want to get out and are willing to waive it, or it's just kind of makes it a little bit more difficult for the team like the Celtics to just move him without a situation that he doesn't desire. And so there is some security in that. So each guy gets a little bit of what they want. Ultimately the winners will be the Celtics if Jalen plays to the value of this contract. And if we look back in 3 years and we're like, wow, people were sweating $60 million annual value, and it turns out, you know, in much the same way that I always go back to the Avery Bradley contract, and that's a poor comparison because it wasn't like supermax or anything like that, but you know, we all freak out at first about these deals. And if it delivers a championship, or if he plays all NBA for multiple seasons, I don't think anyone will be whining about this money.
All right. That's Chris Forsberg, NBC Sports Boston. He'll be on your airwaves on TV.
I'll be on your beach.
Podcast. Beach.
I got a vacation, B-Rob.
He's got places to be. Got things to wrap up in the next 24 to 48 hours. And then you'll see him in
I can get on the golf course. Camp. Not that I haven't been on golf courses, but maybe I can be on more golf courses more often. That'd be nice.
All right. Make sure you check them out on the Celtics Talk podcast, as well as on the NBC Sports Boston airwaves. We'll be back with you next week to respond to Jalen's presser and anything else that this team has on the table as they head into the offseason.